Hello and welcome to Yudcast episode 51. This is Head of School Dan Glass with you once again, recording live in the Sound Lab here at the Brandeis School of San Francisco on a sunny San Francisco December Thursday morning. Nice to have you all here. The last of the school year before we turn the page to 2018. Hard to believe. We're going to start this week, as we start every week, with a poem. And because we are talking about darkness this week, my mind went to the famous Robert Creeley poem, I Know a Man, from one of his earlier collections. It's a 1957 book. And the poem, short, you may recognize it, goes like this. As I said to my friend, because I am always talking, John, I said, which was not his name, the darkness surrounds us. What can we do against it? Or else, shall we, and why not, buy a goddamn big car? Drive, he said, for Christ's sake. Look out where you're going. Love that poem. What is that? 12 lines. Short lines, really full of wit and wonder, and it seemed like a great start for us here today. Yesterday, we had our annual preschool Hanukkah party, so we had some hundreds of preschool students descend upon Brandeis, and as they trooped into the gym hand in hand with our middle schoolers, agog at the bigness of those other kids, the space and the day, it was a good reminder to me to notice the same. It can be easy to lose sight of the scope and the wonder of our world. And their wide eyes, these preschoolers' wide eyes, reasserted for me the awe of the season. Later that morning, in learning to make paper circuits with those same middle school buddies, one girl whirled around to her parents holding a shining LED, and her wonder was, for a moment, it was so present, and it really captured the wonder of the season. It mastered it. It gave it new form. She had done something there, something new, something that she perhaps hadn't thought she could, and the radical amazement on her face spoke to the mysteries and possibilities newly opened. And radical amazement there, of course, comes from the Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel line, which we have talked about in a number of contexts here at Brandeis. And the full quote is, how does it go? I think it goes, our goal should be to live life in radical amazement, to get up in the morning and look at the world in a way that takes nothing for granted. Everything is phenomenal. Everything is incredible. Never treat life casually. To be spiritual is to be amazed. That's something that we love to talk about here at Brandeis, and thinking about the role of spirituality in our kids, and that sort of native awe and wonder with which they approach the world. Yesterday, earlier in the program, my colleague Debbie Artsmore had asked all of our guests to share with their new buddies what they most enjoyed about the Hanukkah holiday. And I was standing at that time with a prospective dad who turned to me and said latkes without missing a beat. And for sure, latkes are pretty amazing. We had a latke making contest that I was lucky to get to be a judge for at our school Hanukkah party last night. And I have to say, people do some creative, wonderful things with latkes. But this dad I was standing next for went on and asked me what my answer would be, what I most enjoy about Hanukkah. I responded that the combination of the melody we use for the prayer, that Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam. Na 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 na. That melody, that piece of that melody, combined with the candle lighting itself, are really my most cherished Hanukkah memories and core childhood scenes that really get evoked for me in an instant by the smell of the match smoke and the lilt, that particular lilt of that song. When I think of those Hanukkah memories, I picture our very small living room on Spalding Street in Berkeley, the darkness of winter night pressing against the window, glowing with the light of the candles in our single menorah. And I have to say, I think there's something sort of hilarious to me about the fact that now everybody gets their own menorah. Even in our family, we like, you know, on the, up on the mantle, there's like five menorahs, like the dog has one. It's amusing to me. Back in the day when we, you know, walked 5 miles through the snow uphill both directions to school, only one menorah. But usually what I think of when I think of those Hanukkah memories is the light quavering and the unfamiliar experience in 20th century America of a room lit solely by candles. This year, though, my younger daughter invited me to see that memory differently. On the first night of Hanukkah, we were lighting the one candle and the shmash, and those they were set at varying distances from each other in our various Hanukkiyot, because, again, everyone has their own. And Alma asked why at the time we weren't lighting all eight candles and pointed to the spaces in between the two lit candles, the one for the first night and the shamash, and highlighted for me the absence their darkness contained. Her question was at once simple and profound. Why don't we light all eight candles? We don't light all eight candles because it's only the first night. That part's very straightforward. But what to make of all that empty space where light could be? I realized in responding that I had always experienced Hanukkah as a building up of light, an accretive holiday that gets brighter day by day. Speaking of accretive, shout out to Wonderful World Words in our Wonderful World. The adjective nacris is one that I remember encountering sometime, probably in graduate school, and being so excited to find essentially a synonym for accretive. Nacris refers to material of pearls and the nacre of pearls and the notion that it builds up layer by layer. So we might call Hanukkah a nacris holiday as well, in the way that the light is building upon itself. But in seeing it in those terms, and seeing it in terms of building up, I render invisible what is lost night by night, which is the darkness, the absence, the between. This realization brought to mind for me a funny Emily Dickinson poem, if you all, dear listeners, will excuse me for describing any Emily Dickinson poem as funny. This one reads in its entirety, "We grow accustomed to the dark when light is put away, as when the neighbor holds the lamp to witness her goodbye. A moment, we uncertain step for newness of the night, then fit our vision to the dark and meet the road erect. And so of larger darknesses, those evenings of the brain, when not a moon disclose a sign or star come out within, the bravest grope a little and sometimes hit a tree directly in the forehead, but as they learn to see, either the darkness alters or something in the sight adjusts itself to midnight and life steps almost straight." There's a lot to engage with in that short poem. Darkness as a space of uncertainty, the darknesses within our minds and spirits, the oddness of her describing someone walking forehead first into a tree. I mean, I have to assume she's thinking of a branch there, but maybe, you know, branch doesn't rhyme as well with C, and it doesn't, in fairness. And of course, the beautiful, awkward pararhyme at the end between sight and straight. And the pararhyme, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the term, is a type of rhyme where the consonants are functionally the same, but the vowel sounds change. And Wilfred Owen, the great British poet of World War I, is probably the most famous exemplar of the use of pararhyme in poetry. But it as a rhyme form, it's a wonderful, strange formal conceit, because it looks like these things should rhyme, right? Sight and straight. I mean, you can see how close those words are. They share many of the same letters, and yet the sounds are quite distinct by virtue of the long I versus the long A vowel sound. And there's an almost bodily discomfort produced by pararhyme, which Wilfred Owen used to great effect to try and sort of produce an experience of the discomfort of the battlefield in World War I and trench warfare. He's an amazing poet. I recommend him to you. But pararhyme is one of the one of those formal poetic structures that always catches my eye. But what it seems to be saying here, I think, is that no matter how accustomed we get to the dark, that the off-rhyme, the pararhyme, seems to say that our paths through it will not be simple. They can only ever be almost straight, right? They don't quite rhyme. We never return to that major chord in that quatrain, as it were. And so we're left hanging a bit in that poem. And Emily Dickinson also makes that move in her poetry often and beautifully. What it means to navigate darkness seems a worthy question of our Hanukkiyot this season. As Rabbi Jonathan Sacks recently said to the House of Lords, our schools need to equip students with an ethical navigation system so that they can meet the uncertain steps of the future with at least a moral compass to guide them. But I think what I learned from our guests yesterday and from my conversation with Alma this week is that we can see in that darkness not only the absence of light waiting to be filled or the fear of the unknown, but as well mystery, possibility, and perhaps even hope. And with that, I wish you all holidays and sparkle seasons full of the bright and the dark, my friends. Happy Hanukkah to all of you, and a Shabbat Shalom to all of you listening on Shabbat. Happy New Year, happy winter solstice, all the winter holidays. Merry Christmas for all of you. Any of your celebrations this season, I hope they are joyful. And we will be back with you in the future, the year 2018.